So first off, good afternoon. Thank you for attending Troubleshooting Link 2013 with Enterprise Voice. I always have very mixed feelings on these type of sessions because one, as a speaker, I'm glad to have a packed room. Two, that means a lot of people having voice issues. So what we're gonna do, first and foremost, my name is Byron Spurlock. I have some giveaways as far as these Skype free minutes. So I will give those out randomly throughout the session. So it's gonna make you pay attention because I'll just at randomly say, what does this mean? Or what is this tool? How could you use it, et cetera? So one of the first ones I'm gonna give out, it should be the easiest. And it's gonna go to the first hand whoever comes up. Has anyone ever had me in a session before that they've attended? One, so the first one right here. Just, where was that session again? Was that?
Tempe,
Arizona, right?
Yep.
Okay, that's the easiest one. So you missed out if you missed that one. To go through introductions, again, my name is Byron Spurlock, Link Technical Architect. You can reach me at byrons@quadranttechnologies.com. So the first prefix is pretty easy, first name, last initial. The last one, a little bit more complex. I know it's a long suffix, but it's just one T in that Quadrant Technologies. Definitely feel free to email me if there's any questions, comments, feedback in the session. I will do my best to, if you have a question throughout the session, I'll do my best to entertain those. But if it's going a little bit beyond 30 seconds, I'm actually to save it to the end. Very good one. If the answer is, if I see it's going to be entailed, wait after, and I'll definitely do my best to answer your question. You can also reach me at Twitter as well. And before I forget, you can also look at, you can also reach me at Windows IT Pro. So I've written a lot of Windows Link 2013 articles for them. Some of the things that I'm talking about, I've covered in more in depth in my the articles that I've written as well. So we have a pretty packed agenda. If anyone's ever seen me speak before, I can be long-winded, so I'm not trying to put you to sleep, but the fact that you just had lunch and now, I could see a few heads nod. So we have a pretty packed agenda, and the good thing is about it, the conference officially started today, right? So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I have the joy of having you on the first couple sessions. And the good thing for you on that is, if it was towards the end, there could be 100 slides in this deck, because the more I kept adding, I was like, they got to see this, they got to know this, I should tell them about this. And I was already at 70, and it's 75 minutes in the session. So some of these I will skip by pretty fast. And I also have some demos as well. So I'll try to pack in all this as where I see fit. The agenda we have is pretty packed. We're going to talk about a troubleshooting approach, some key architecture flows, some tools, and there's demos. Pretty much also there's a one-to-one scenario of every tool that I'm going to talk about, I will demo for you as well. We'll talk about some common scenarios, monitoring reports, which is probably my favorite, synthetic transactions, which is also probably my second favorite. And for the sake of time, I had to put the performance counters in the appendix, but I'm gonna try my best to squeeze some of those in as well. And if there's time, of course, we'll do some Q&A. For everyone in the back, can you hear me pretty well? Great. So let's get started. The first thing to talk about specifically with this session is we're gonna try to stay on task with just the voice aspects. Link, as you pretty much all know, is a well-encompassing product, all the way back from OCS days to Link 2013 days. Just by a show of hands, how many have deployed Link 2013 today? Nice. How many are in a coexistence state with 2010 and, okay. Is anyone running OCS still? A couple people, so you're gonna be going to 2013. Is anyone running LCS? I was hoping I wasn't going to get into someone raising hands. Wow. You're a hard person to find. The troubleshooting approach, dealing with voice. Some of the key questions that I'm sure you have users ask is, what's wrong with this call? Why did I see a user-facing diagnostics in my call session or on my screen that pops up? A call just dropped. What do I do about that? Is this expected? Most of the times through all deployments that I'll say is, the best thing to happen to Link is cell phones. Does anyone know why? I heard lower expectations. Blame it on the service provider. But drop calls. I mean, what happens today when we have a drop call on a cell phone? We just dial right back. Someone says, oh, I lost you. I was going through a tunnel or whatever. And just resumes. So I'm not trying to degrade Link or say anything bad. But that's kind of the best thing to happen with voice technology as far as voice over IP with cell phone providers is that cell phones are readily dropping calls. For you guys, the administrators, how do I read these reports? Something that I'm very shocked that comes up that we'll get into later towards the tail end of this session is monitoring reports. For the surprise that a lack of people who don't deploy a monitoring server, secondly, who don't know how to read them, and then what happens when you integrate it with SCOM? I mean, you have a wealth of information that's going to be right there. And I have a couple examples for you that I'll show you of real monitoring reports with real issues and what they mean. And also probably another big one is how do I determine what the X value is in a report means? Because there's so much. There's a wealth of information from IP addresses to MOS reports, mean opinion scores, et cetera. And where do I start? That's probably the biggest thing that I see a lot of times in a lot of deployments is once you leave, a lot of admins are saying, well, hold on, before you leave, how did you know how to solve that problem so fast? And believe it or not, this is going to lead into the second part of the agenda when we talk about the foundation. And I'll talk more about that. The troubleshooting approach, three different areas. Besides doing sessions like this or these type of conferences, I'm in the field with you guys as well. So don't think that I'm some type of trainer that goes around and speaks and doesn't get his hands on. I'm in the trenches exactly with you. At the same time, I'm doing multiple deployments in Link 2013. Some complex, some not as complex. All of them consistently are all enterprise voice related. And we'll talk about some of the issues we run into. Excuse me. And also teach as well. So I also teach a lot of the Microsoft official curriculum classes as well. But my core belief has always stemmed from these three things as far as network, server, and client. The best thing that for you to do in a situation where you're involving an approach of how to address the issue, you have to drill down into one of those buckets as quickly as possible. For example, if I'm a user and I call you and you're the IT guy and I say, you know what, I had bad voice quality. And if you're asking me questions such as, has this happened before? Yes. How often does it happen? Well, I just told you that it happened before, so yes, it happens all the time. How does a voice sound to you? We're not getting anywhere in this conversation because this goes back to the slide, network, server, or client. As quick as possible, you need to find out where the problem lies to ask more strategic questions. For example, on the network side, are you internal or remote? Right then and there, I'm delineating what kind of problem I'm dealing with. Is it only affecting you? Very good. Policies. Sometimes a user may not know if they have policies involved, but also wired and wireless. That should be one of not the top three questions you ask someone. Once you find out, they say, no, I'm not internal. Are you wireless? Well, I'm at home. Well, still answer my question. Are you wireless? Because you could be plugged up to your router. That's a key point to look at. And I'll also show you a monitoring report that will also dictate that as well. Server. The server is a little bit more difficult, mainly because the good thing about the server being bad or server having an issue, you have a wealth of users having an issue. So it goes back to the gentleman who said, is anyone else having an issue? If I'm at a branch office and they said, yes, the whole branch is having an office, believe it or not, that's a good thing. Because now you say I'm not isolated to one individual user. Now I have a wealth of users, so there's a bigger issue. Maybe it's a switch. Maybe it's the connection. Maybe it's a server. Or maybe they're running an SBA or SBS. And I'll try not to stay away from just spotting out acronyms all the time. SBA, Survivor Branch Appliance. SBS, Survivor Branch Service, as far as voice deployments where you have branch offices and you have voice needs for those locations. And then also the client, as far as configuration settings, internet connections, but you kind of get the picture here. You need to get into one of those buckets as soon as possible as finding out, is it individual user, is it a WAN issue, is it a server issue, et cetera, and we'll help you get there as well. Voice quality issues. The key thing that I want you to take away from this slide, and this slide will be available for you after the session. So if you look forward, I haven't uploaded it yet, but after that, because I wanted to add a couple more things, I will have it available for you to look at. But the key thing for this slide that I want you to take away is there's a lot of different common denominators as far as audio quality and call reliability, but there's a lot of devices or sources where these can be stemmed from. When we talk about call reliability, drop calls, failed calls. A little bit of a subtle difference. A drop call insinuates that I'm already inside the call before it actually drops, compared to a failed call, which it never got established. That's huge when someone's saying that same scenario, I can't make a link call. Well, let's be very specific. And if anyone has known me, you know I'm very, very specific. It's hard to be, you can't be vague with the voice. So that same issue, when a user says, my voice call is not working, well, let's be more specific here. Did you actually make a call and it succeed and then it dropped, or were you never able to make the call? Right then and there, I'm able to tell what's happening with their actual client. Is it, again, a client issue, server issue, et cetera? But this goes to call reliability. Audio quality, we see we have a little bit more things in flux. We have broken up audio, delayed audio, distorted audio, low volume, noise, echo, one-way audio. The more you inform your users about these buzzwords, the more they will help you out, believe it or not. Because users don't know what these are. Now, I'm not saying they're supposed to memorize this because that's kind of your position, but giving a user information as far as broken up audio, because the user's going to say again, hey, my audio doesn't sound very well. You can easily ask them, and I've done this before, does it sound like this when I'm talking to you? So I just lowered my volume. And they're like, yeah, the person, I can hear him, but it's just low. Could be a very easy issue, just the volume on their issue, on their side. Or it could be like this in a conversation, which is the broken up audio. Or it could be like that. It could be like that, for example, where it's just delayed audio effect. But those are all different things within Link that you're going to encounter, and we'll talk about how to mitigate some of those. Some are mostly from the network, as far as the distorted audio, delayed audio, broken up audio. And again, some of you may be used to the call and message control, bandwidth. We'll talk about that as well, how that plays a part into this. Core performance. So one of the subtle things that I've seen is between 2010 and 2013, a lot of you know that the mediation server is now kind of more of a onus to co-locate on the front end server. Besides that big item and virtualization being a lot more readily supported on the media roles, you still have the chance for distortion, delayed audio, because of virtualization. Virtualization, specifically with real-time audio, there's still times it's going to take a hit. So specifically when you're doing deployments and a customer tells you, or you're the customer, and you know that you're going to make a lot of enterprise voice calls, and here's another moment for another giveaway. In your own words, give me a definition of what is an enterprise voice call. Yes. Call to the PSTN. If someone doesn't answer better, then you win. Yes. Calls using the mediation server. You're in the lead. Anyone else? Yes. Yes, I think you're still in the lead. Anyone else want to give it a try before I hand one off? Yes. Calls going outside of Link. Transcode. Who said that? Okay, so I'm going to give away two because that's kind of the perfect definition. One for you, and if you guys can pass it back, hopefully it doesn't go missing by the time it gets back there. But One thing that I always say, and just to kind of level set, the other definitions were pretty much on point. But one of the definitions that I always give for customers with enterprise voice, because it could be very loosely termed, because someone could say, I want outbound calls through Link, but inbound calls going through my Cisco or my Avaya or whatever handset. Or I want to make inbound calls as well, but for outbound, they go through another medium. My definition normally is any inbound or outbound or ingress or egress calls that traverse the mediation server is technically enterprise voice. That's why, like when you say mediation server. And what I mean by that is a lot of times you'll have customers who don't solely have enterprise voice in their definition by saying, our DID does not get homed on Link. That's fine. You still have enterprise voice. Well, how do you see that? Because all outbound calls are going through your Link server. That's definition of enterprise voice. Another scenario is when some organization says, well, you know what? We have set up Link where a Link user can call another Avaya or a Cisco handset. That's still enterprise voice. How's it going to get there? It's going to traverse the mediation server, which innately we have when we traverse the mediation server, we're talking about codec translations. So anytime this codec translation increases the CPU overhead, which goes back to the core performance, which could have a possible delay in audio, broken up audio, depending on the way I deployed it, depending on the type of server, depending on how much memory is involved, how many I have, depending on how many people I have for enterprise voice. So these are all some key things to take into consideration. I'm going to speed up here just a little bit, but gateways, as far as your PSTN gateways, can also, depending on if I'm going through a particular gateway, like the Dialogic, NET, or Sonos type gateways, audio codes, and also specifically the type of trunk that I'm going through, whoever I set it up through Avaya or Cisco, et cetera. And also devices. So the key architecture flows. So this may seem like a little bit out of the realm of this session, but a lot of times, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this because there are actually different sessions for ICE and STUN and TURN, what those really are, and dig down into those. But this is a high-level view of talking about, this is, as you troubleshoot it, this is important to know. I'm not asking everyone to remember, but specifically when a user, and I'll give you a way of seeing this later, but when a user says, I can't make an audio call and I'm remote. Well, if I'm having a conversation with you and I'm asking you, we do have the TCP and UDP ports outside for our AV Edge server set up, correct? And if you're troubleshooting with someone else and they're like, what? Right then and there, we haven't done anything, but this is pure architecture level. We know that TCP and UDP are specifically for voice. You can see here we have the UDP for 3478443 for TCP. We know that TCP is going to be the base level foundation if UDP is not met for that audio call to take place. We haven't touched one bit in how to troubleshoot yet, but we're talking about the key foundations that you're going to see later in slides and in the actual real charts that this is going to make sense. Specifically, that port range of 50,000 to 59,000 for TCP going outbound specifically, unless I'm federating with OCS users. And also for 8057 on the right-hand side over here. Let me see if that's, oh, cool, I have a pointer. So 8057, we know that's for conferencing. And I'm going to walk through a conferencing model very quick as well. So these are just core architecture things that are going to be key for your importance of troubleshooting. Because if I were to walk in your environment right now, and I was to go to your firewall group, and I specifically said, you know what? That protocol for 8057 that you have going to the actual internal edge server, can you flip it around for me? I wonder, and it's more of a rhetorical question, I wonder how many people would actually find it out in their environment. Most times, you're kind of running around, conferences can't be made is the actual symptom. Users can't get into a conference, specifically when they're outside, what's going on? But they can get into an inside. I don't understand what's going on. That one little protocol and that specific direction of going inbound to your edge server is what controls that. Because remember, the edge server doesn't hold any conferences. It just proxies them to your internal pool. So a lot of times, through every single deployment that I do, as we're going through the installs, I, you know, emphasize to whoever I'm deploying it with is, this is why this is important. This is why that protocol is important. This is why we didn't select for example, this is how we're using 443. This is how we're using 5061. This is why that port range of 50,000 to 59,000 going outbound is going to be important, specifically for app sharing, which is not even related to voice. So I go through those instances all the time, just kind of hit home with customers of the importance, because you're going to have issues. Conferencing. It's important in this to know how conferencing works. So I'll give you a scenario that happened for real, and then I'll walk through this environment. Here's another chance for another giveaway. And I only have this one and one more left. If I was to go on your front-end server, and I disabled, or stopped or disabled, doesn't matter, your conferencing auto attendance service. As a link user related to conferences, what would not work? Dialing in, let's see if I can get a more specific one. That's 90% there. Anyone else want to take a, yes? So far, you're in the lead still. Yeah, I mean, that's a good one though, but not specifically, yes. He said dialing conferencing. I'm waiting, yes. Not quite. So I'll give you the answer. So you won this one. So if I actually stop that service, users, dialing is one of them, will not be able to get into that conference at all. No users will be able to get into a conference. But that's the importance of, and I'm bridging here between core and also voice. That's the importance of just those services, specifically those two services, conferencing auto attendant, conferencing announcement service, knowing what the services are responsible for. The conferencing announcement service is, thank you for joining the meeting. Byron has left the call. Doug has joined the meeting. Kevin has joined the call. And that's if I have the greetings turned on. Please put in your conference ID. That's the conference announcement service. The conference auto attendant is what even allows you into the conference. So if I was to stop that, users would try to initiate a conference, dial in, and also the Meet Now conference, and wouldn't even get in. But that's if I stopped that. And then think of it, and this is a real scenario I ran into before. Imagine a pool with four front-end servers. I stop it on one. It's sporadic. So the feedback now that I'm getting is some users can get into a conference, some can't. So now we're kind of going back to those buckets of server, network, and client. We're like, some clients can, but some clients can't. So you're kind of going back and forth. But how did I solve it? Now, I'm not an expert on every single issue. But one, knowing this helped me understand that. Because immediately when someone called me about that, I said, let's jump straight to the services. They're like, why are you going to services? Let's look at logs. Let's look at the services first. We jumped on server one, server two, server three had the issue. When that CAA service was stopped, we started it. Boom, conferences were working very quickly. But it was, again, knowing what the service does. With this conferencing flow, so I want to walk you through this very quickly because this is going to be important for you. If I told you terms as far as MCU factory, if I told you terms as focus, which all meeting related, which is conferencing related, which is voice related. The first thing that happens is the user tries to schedule a conference. When they schedule a conference, they're basically leveraging the focus factor. And then when I say the scheduling a conference, that's through that live meeting and then your Outlook, you hit schedule a conference. That actually basically talks to the backend SQL Server. So specifically what's working here is the focus factory. The reason I'm bringing that into play because you would actually see that in event logs if you have an issue with users can't schedule a conference. After that conference has been scheduled, then now the user joins. They click on the whole join, meet now, and they talk to the focus specifically. The focus is what's responsible for controlling the whole conference, allowing users in, removing users, telling you the roster, etc. When that person tries to join a conference, specifically what happens next is a focus talks to the MCU factory. The MCU factory's only purpose in life here is basically to find out which server can that conference sit on. Once it finds out which server is available, it hands that information back to the focus. The focus tells you, join this server. That's kind of it in a nutshell. I can go into it more in depth, but I got a lot more slides here. But why would you be telling us this? Specifically because, again, you're not going to find services that relate to Focus, MCU Factory, Focus Factory. However, if I was to, during the middle of the day, reboot your SQL Server, users trying to set up a conference, they would have an issue. If the stars were aligned, right when I rebooted, users trying to initiate a conference, as far as set up a conference, they would get it failed. Hey, I can't schedule this conference, what's going on? By the time it gets to you, by the time you answer the call, by the time you're trying to find out what's going on, the server's probably back up. And they're gonna say, it works now. But that's how a core role relates to voice, right then and there. All right, we'll kind of go forward on the voice routing. So the voice routing is a little bit more tricky in nature because there's a lot of ins and outs of what can happen. I won't go through every single bullet point, but specifically what I want to point you to is a user initiates a call. So again, if I'm that user who's inside the organization and I tell you, hey, a call can't be made, you could kind of see based on this chart how silly a question it is for me to say, what type of call? I mean, we're not getting anywhere here. My specific questions to them are you dialing outside the PSTN? Are you dialing a number? Or are you doing a link call? Oh, yeah, I'm dialing my wife's phone number. So you're actually dialing the number. You put it in, is it normalizing? What is normalizing? Do you see a plus country code? It does this kind of morph thing. It morphs out into the whole number. But right then and there, and that's user talk, because they don't know what normalization is, right? So we know right then and there, user phone number, we know it's not an inbound call, because that would be routed directly to our SIP. That's basically me calling an internal number or an internal user that has reverse number lookup happening, and it finds the user via SIP URI, boom, the endpoint rings. This is an outbound call automatically. Why? Because my wife's cell phone number is not in the organization. So immediately I'm going to outbound call. Now, knowing that, now what comes into play with outbound calls? Voice policies, phone usages, the dial plan, the trunks, which relate to the gateways. Immediately, that's what I should be thinking. That right then and there delineates, am I troubleshooting an internal issue versus an outside issue? So for the essence of this session, this is all user habits. As far as internal, as far as SIP URI call, a outside PSTN call, does the rule even match? Can the call be even made? Just because a call is not successful, what would I begin looking at here? I begin looking at specifically, one, does that user have permissions to even call outside? Am I talking about local, international, long distance? Now I'm getting to my phone usages and also my routes. And also there's gateway selection as well, as far as routes, PSTN usages, et cetera. And then last but not least, I'm talking about my actual trunk, going to a CM or a session manager or an Avaya. So these are all different components of the users making a call that come into play. This is my reminder to go to show you the link poster, which I'm sure a lot of you have seen, but for this session, it kind of hits on the architecture again, because I'm talking about AV and web conferencing. So we can see all the protocol flows. And some of this I verbally have mentioned, just at random, about how this traffic flows, about how where PSOM goes. You can see right here, PSOM, my internal pool, going to my edge server, but the web conferencing connection happens through PSOM, but proxies it to my front-end server. That's why that's important. It's right there in our poster. And I could spend a whole session on the poster, but I'm not. But I'll also show you from the enterprise voice side as well. So, I mean, if you want to look at specifically why voice is important, we talk about the same ports we talked about earlier as far as that 50,000 range for TCP, stun, turn, as for UDP and TCP going through the edge server, set up a call. We can also see we'll also talk about synthetic transactions or where Exchange UM is important as well. And also to the front-end server and also how the director comes in as well. But this, I'm sure, looks like a freeway depending on where you live. But this is why this is important, just knowing the core foundation before I begin troubleshooting. So tools. Several tools that I want to inform you about. Voice routing test tool, ICE warning, pre-call diagnostics, central logging service, and audio test tool. So the voice routing test tool. The voice routing test tool, whenever you create dial plans, so this goes back to the whole enterprise voice scenario. The last situation you want to be in is you basically think you've created all your rules, and your normalization rules, your usages, your policies, your multiple dollar plans. You think you have everything set, and then you have that user who says, I can't make an outbound call. So now the question is, like, I think I set everything up. What route are they going to? And I'll show you how you can see that separately through Snooper. But the voice routing test tool, you can do two types of tests. You can do very specific tests, and also you can do random tests. The random tests are the very informal tests, which is basically putting a number, and I'll show this here in a bit. You can put in a number, and it will just look up whatever usage, whatever policy that's applied to that user. The main goal of the informal test is you just want to see that the call can be made. The formal test is where the test that I'll have is where I'm putting in a specific VoIP policy, a specific phone usage, and a specific number that's dialed, and I want to see if that's passed or not. That will right there will simulate, one, not only is this extension working, but is it working with this particular usage and this particular policy? So let me go back and forth here. You guys can see that, great. So here, I'm in my my voice routing. So for those who, maybe if you have seen it, great. If you have used it, great. For those who haven't, I'm in my link control panel. I'm in my voice routing section, and I'm on my test routing, my test voice routing. Now, the nice thing about this is you need to create new tests every time. You can't, if you try to have the same new test and you keep editing it, you're just writing over the same existing rule. So you're not really, you don't have anything to kind of go back into to look at. But here, I called it test one, internal call, and it's basically I'm simulating a user dialing an extension. Here is 31254. I put in here the expected translation as far as what's gonna happen. Now, this can vary depending upon how I'm integrated with my telephony. If I have Link being the one-all be-all solution, or I'm integrating with a PBX. And the reason I say specifically PBX, because if I'm calling another user internally for my Link client, that PBX may be looking to have those numbers in a certain context. And that's gonna be important as well, because if I'm a telephony person, I may be telling you, hey, I would like to have 5 digits. I don't want the whole number of digits that you normalize. I want to have specifically 5 digits. So here, what I'm simulating in this environment is my dial number that someone calls is 31254. The specific policy they're using for voice policy is a global one. They have their default PSTN usage, and the route that they're leveraging is a 5-digit internal extension. So I basically put that the expected translation based upon my normalization rule that I've already created is supposed to be 31254, which I put in here, and you can see that on the right hand side, everything passes. So sometimes it's not enough just to say, let me see if I can do this as well. Sometimes it's not enough just to say test result passed. That may not be fine for me, because a call could be made, right? But it didn't go through they didn't use the correct dial plan that I wanted. They didn't use the correct voice policy that I wanted, or the phone usages. That's why this is why it's important for me here to say, yep, they used the exact route, they used the exact PSTN usage, it normalized the way I wanted to, and this is the normalization rule that I wanted for that particular number to be dialed. This is all pre-work. This is something that I personally say, if you're doing after the fact, you missed something along the doing your deployment. So I actually created a couple ones here. I won't go through every single one, but I'll look at the outbound call too, because again, outbound, depending on your scenario, depending on how you're connected to a telephony provider, I may want to translate those numbers differently. Here, I'm actually putting my cell phone, and it's actually my true cell phone there. So I put 713-494-1831, that's actually being called. My expected translation is that plus in that country code that's being sent out. So that call is actually being sent out my specific trunk. Now at that point in time, I could be relying on this particular factor that the PBX is going to be stripping the plus and the one, depending on how they want the digits. It varies from company to company. But the whole goal here is saying, if a user simulates this number, what usages and what normalization should happen? What should it look like beforehand? Let's go back here. Ice warning flag decoder. So as you guys sit here and you're listening throughout the session, if I digress just for a moment, some of your goals may be to learn something new that you didn't know before. Some of it could be you just need a hiding place from after lunch from your peers. My goal is pretty simplistic, is to make it through my demos without something failing. Because I have quite a few demos, and as you know, the more demos you have, the higher the chance for something to fail here. So I'm off to my next demo here. But talking about the ice warning flag. Ice warning flags are specific, as it states here, ICE protocol flags that are generated when a linked voice call is placed, composed in hexadecimal format. Technically, it's in binary format, but it's written in hexadecimal for you to transcribe the actual notes. And we're going to look at the tool that does that. So why is this even important to me? One, and the URL is here for you to download it. One is every VoIP call, and I'll say that again, every single VoIP call, there's actually a warning flag. That warning flag could be docile, meaning it just, hey, there's no errors. Or it could be that there's a UDP can't be performed, or it can't be translated on your, you can't be connected to the UDP on your edge server. You can't connect to TCP. It could be that your edge server is down, your primary edge server, and your secondary edge server is actually fulfilling that call from an AV edge service. So again, I'm merging here the core foundation that we talked about when we had the poster, and I talked about edge and the ports. This is where it comes in. Here's an example of an ICE warning flag that's witnessed through Snooper. So the symptom here that I'm troubleshooting is a user's call dropped. A user call dropped. The next time they try to connect to it again, now it can't even be made. Specifically, what I'm looking at is once I start going through the logs, the Snooper logs specifically, I'm doing a search for ICE warning flags. And then you can summarize that by saying ICE warning or just ICE. But the only thing different about searching just for ICE, you may get that whole candidate list, which may not be specifically what you're looking for. Everyone's familiar with the candidate list, right? You got to give me some feedback. Blank stares mean Byron, keep rolling. Okay. All right. The candidate list is basically whenever a call is being made, a link call, the link itself goes through three sets of criteria, basically. It says if it can go through peer-to-peer, that's what they call local, because by choice, I don't want to go directly to you, or it goes through the reflective IP address, which is basically if you're at home or whatnot, your router, your D-Link or router or so. And last but not least is your relay, which is the actual edge server, which a lot of times, in this verbiage, I'll call the turn server. So, and also that's important to know what the turn server is, because that's the way the ICE decoder says something's wrong with your edge server. It'll say your turn server. So those three methods that whenever I try to send a call to you, it'll check. It'll check peer-to-peer. It'll check the reflective, which is a public IP address of your router. And this is all through UDP and TCP. Last but not least, it'll actually check the relay server, again, for UDP or TCP, which goes back to the ports we talked about, 443 and 3478. So here, we see that the ICE warning flag of nothing. Nothing is good because it lets me know that my call was successful with no issues at all being set up. Initiated, which is the invite and the actual acknowledgement of that call. The acknowledgement as in the second person, the caller picked up, there was no issues. So again, I would search for normally for this ICE warning in your Snooper, and you will actually see this. The link to download it here, this is just a little executable tool. So good point. So let me clarify that more. This tool that I'll show you is what will help you understand what that error means. Because without that error, you're going to look at it and say, you know, go back to your environments and say, okay, great, Byron, you told me what ICE warning was. Yeah, I have some, but what does that mean? It's not giving me anything. So the decoder is what you put in as far as the actual value, because this value will show multiple different things. It will show you 0.1, 0.2, 0.4, 4,000. Correct. I have 200 here. I put it in and I hit submit, and it actually tells me what's happening. TCP turn server connectivity failed, which goes basically on the verbiage we talked about earlier. So now that I know that TCP is 443, I know that, and that's the last resort of a call trying to be made. Yes. You could do it anywhere you want.
So what I'm saying is, if I'm, let's say I'm in Marathon and I run Super on their stuff and I get an ICE warning of 0.x200, does 0x200 mean the same thing whether I run that on their machine or whether I run on
Yes. It's uniform. It's across. So basically a standard. Yes. I'm going to get to that. So the question you basically asked is, what log am I looking for to get this information? It is a part of the S4 is basically mentioned was a component of every single type of scenario that I want to log for. There's a lot of different components. S4 is one of them, but I'll talk about that in just a bit. So to answer more of yours and show you here is, again, time for another demo. Here's this decoder. And again, the link, the URL that I provided, you just simply download it just like you would anything else, like BPA or remote connectivity analyzer or anything like that. It could be anywhere you want it. Preferably, I don't install it on the server because I don't want people trying to diagnose and look at the tool directly on the server. So I download it locally in my workstation. The important thing for you is that warning result. So in essence, the scenario is a user says they have a problem with the call. You actually go through Snooper, or you say, give me your Snooper logs. You do a search for ICE warning. And you find out some result. And the result you may find is, let's say, for example, we'll say 8. That was the result of the what was in Snooper. And you can see here, it basically says, an attempt to allocate a TCP port on the turn server failed. Correct. See, I'm already speaking that kind of language. But that is the edge server. So at that point in time, I'm looking to see if my edge server is even available. Because why would that be important for me? This goes back to the core foundation of Link. Whenever I set up a call, remember, UDP is the preferred. If UDP is not available, TCP will try as well. TCP is that last attempt. If TCP cannot be made, there's something wrong here. Maybe my edge server is down. Maybe my AV edge server is not even running, et cetera. But by me getting this result, and I could put in another one scenario. For example, if I put in 2, and I get an attempt to allocate a UDP port and the turn server failed, this could be for a couple different reasons. It could depend on the firewall I'm behind. Because if I'm at home, I may get this example. Because now, maybe my internal firewall at my resident is blocking me out. Maybe I'm at a customer site trying to make a call. They're blocking it. It could be a couple of different scenarios on why that call is not being made. The key thing here is that, one, you have a URL to go to now. These flags do mean something. As we dig down further into why the call cannot be made, this gives you a little bit more information as far as from a protocol standpoint, TCP, I'll give you one more, for example, before we move on. Turn server is unreachable. That should be a blatant, something's wrong here. And then when I think turn server, AKA edge server, and I say the turn server is unreachable, administrator needs to ensure that the right ports, 3478443, by default are open on the firewall. Where would this be important for me? Again, if I'm deploying Edge in an organization, I entrust the firewall guy and they say, yeah, everything's running. So I'm not leveraging this report or this tool to be the one all be all. My physical test as well is users' calls cannot be made. So I'm using this to back my presidents that there's something wrong. I looked at event logs, as calls are not successful. I'm tracing on the Edge server itself. I see calls not even coming in. I'm looking at the client now as far as a snooper trace. I get a result of 0.1. I put that in here. It confirms that everything else has been saying. So now I have multiple different sources to go to that resource and say, I think we're missing something here. As opposed to, can you check it again? I told you it's open. Okay, thank you very much. And you walk away. So this was not available before. I know it became published around November, December last year or so. So definitely make use of... Yes. That I don't know. I don't know. I count my blessings whenever they come in. And when this tool became available, it was like, thank you. So I don't know why they made it online. But it does have a feedback area, and that's something I would definitely shoot for. So now ice warning flags. We talked about that. Pre-call diagnostics. Again, another tool. The Link pre-diagnostics tool is a client-based application. So one is to illustrate that one of the things to do besides to take a user's word for it is to leverage tools, because depending on where you're at, some people may be big on tools. So we've already talked about, we've already shown you one from the server side as far as the routing. We've shown you another one with the ice warning flags because you're kind of doing analysis there, but also pre-call diagnostics. The pre-call diagnostics shows you mainly from the client only, because what happens when someone's at home, and I had this exact same scenario happen to me, happened to be a school was out kind of day in Houston where I'm from. So both kids were at home, the wife was at home, and I'm trying to be on a Link call. And normally, pristine audio, normally. But today, very garbled, very slow, I couldn't connect half the time. And it just dawned on me, you know what, let me run this tool and figure out what's going on. And what I saw was a lot of jitter, a lot of packet loss. My network MOS wasn't very high. So now it kind of goes beyond the Link having an issue. Now I have a home issue, right? Because what happens when the remote user says, I can't make a call? We all get that. Well, how is your wireless network? You kind of do it with eggshells, right? Yes. I'm sorry? Yes, and I'm going to show you a demo here in just a second. His question was, do you run this on the client side? But in my particular issue, I happened to notice I couldn't make calls, and it was during lunchtime kind of thing. And I'm like, this morning was fine, but now it's not. So I started putting two and two together, and if this is being recorded, I'm going to be very careful because my wife may listen to it later. So it was basically, kids get home, wife gets home from lunch, everybody jumps on the devices, right? Wife is on the laptop, kids on the iPod, kids on Wi-Fi, he's on Xbox Live streaming stuff. This is all going through my, so I look at my router, it's just like Christmas lights going up, you know? And I'm like, what's going on? So I immediately, believe it or not, I literally go to the next room, I'm like, what are you doing? Because I'm streaming some video. Can you stop it right now? Dad's on a call. He stopped it. I saw basically my jitter pack loss go down immediately. So to go straight into the tool, and the URL here is an article that I wrote on Windows IT Pro, where you can actually see some more information about it. But I will skip straight to the demo. I started earlier, but I could basically hit start. And what you'll see is in three different areas, for my packet loss, network MOS, packet loss, and interval jitter.
So you said that link was to your blogger?
Yeah.
Where did you get the tool?
I put it on the blog, on my blog as well. But also you can just do a Bing or a search for PCD diagnostic tool. So it's a Microsoft tool that, and you can see right here, it's starting to kick in. The nice thing about this tool, you can run it in two modes. You can run it in modes of every 2 minutes, or you can run it all the time. So it depends on this, your environment. I normally run this in the mornings just to see how kind of what's going on. But here you can see that my network MOS is basically kind of digressing just a little bit. Network MOS as far as mean opinion score, you know, one being, you know, not great, four being pristine. I now have a result of, if I was to make a network or link call, what type of result would that call look like or would it hear like? There's also another tool that I'm gonna show you that can coincide with this tool. But the key thing, which answers the gentleman in the back, his question was, do you give the client this? Yes. You spread the word about your users. Run this when they're in Starbucks, when they're in their hotel, et cetera. So when that hotel wireless seems to be flaky, per se, and you're about to jump on a call, you do this. Yes? Very good question. So his question was, is this compatible with Communicator and Link? Both. So it actually came out with OCS. So they're actually working on the client, but also compatible with Link as well. I have not seen a way to export the data. I haven't that. If I want to get data from users, I'm going to go to another method. I'm going to look at Netmon. Excuse me, I'm already, yeah, network QoE server. Let's go back to the default name I used to know by. I'm going to go back to QoE server, network monitoring server, or I'm going through Snooper. If I need to personally grab that. What I normally tell users is click the little start button, you know, which is easy for them to do, and you see levels. 1, bad, 4, good. What is it sitting at? Oh, it's sitting at 2, kind of 2.5. Is it steady or is it going up and down? Oh, it's kind of going up and down, but it's not dipping below 2. I just want to know everything I need to know right then and there. But again, this is another tool, testing out voice, that would help out tremendously, specifically before and during a call. I have not seen publication for other platforms, but it works with Windows 8, and if you have Windows 8, they actually give you a better GUI of what it looks like as well. But this is a user-facing tool, though. Server side is not going to really help you. It's not going to really help you from the server side. Very good question. I wouldn't have mentioned this. It's resource, if you do it for 2 minutes, it's not resource intensive, but if you have it ongoing, the user could have issues with their audio or video call while it's running. So it's best to say, when you're on your own, run this and see what happens and then initiate the call. But if they're running this at the same time, it's kind of conflicting with pre-call diagnostics. There you go. Yeah. That is correct. It's testing their connection to the internet. No, it's not. So the question is, it testing their local network and detecting the actual path, their path to get out from their, based on whatever connection they're on, you know, AT&T or their wireless or whatever, or just in a hotel lobby, whatever is available for them. It's not testing specifically the network or the your organization's connection. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. No. We'll show you server side, but this is, as Jeff mentioned, pure client side, kind of empowering the user with something here. Centralized logging service. So the centralized logging service is another tool that has changed from the Link 2010 days. I say that kind of like history, but some of you may be on it today. But the Link 2010 days of the console logger, if anyone's remember that. So the question came up earlier about which component are you trying to leverage? If anyone's remember the old console logger days, you basically had three panes: components, what level, and what we want to filter on. The components, they were just nasty. And what I mean by that, and it was just, if you had a scenario that you wanted to monitor or to troubleshoot, you had to know the exact component, or you're missing out some information. So basically what the centralized logging service does, it builds and replaces the existing Link server tool. And it allows admin to quickly search and get logs reporting on scenarios, which is more of the green light, yellow light, red kind of feel, because you may not know what, should I monitor on S4, should I monitor on SIPStack, should I monitor on media connectivity? You may not know depending on the situation. So what goes into depths here is we talk about the CLS architecture. The good thing about this also too, compared to 2010 versus 2013, 2010, you pretty much had to know what server, right? Specifically, if I had a user that said, I'm having a problem with a call. Well, which server you're on? Ah, I just forgot it. You know, Link doesn't really have, you know, you could be on any particular server. Once I find the server you're on, I'm golden, but I got to find the server you're on. And then I had to enable logging on that particular server, or I could be monitor, or I could be logging on the wrong server. So those are some headaches that you had to deal with. But now what this architecture is basically showing you, some of the commands, specifically the stop search commands, but also how every front-end server has an agent, and every single front-end has an agent that you could just run this from any particular front-end server. And based on the scenario, it pulls them all. It pulls them all as in all front-end services, front-end servers for that particular scenario. The scenario we're talking about here are the following. The scenarios that I put in bold are voice specific. So some that you should really love, the inbound, the incoming and outgoing call. Again, it goes back to that user saying, I'm having trouble making an outbound call. So besides pre-call diagnostics, which we just talked about, besides a monitoring server, which we're gonna talk about here in a bit, the kind of the thing that I used to dread was going on that server to get logs. I used to dread that because I'm like, ah, which front-end server they're on. I'm gonna get a synopsis of everything unless I do filtering, which in previous voice sessions, troubleshooting, I actually broke down how to do filtering. But again, you had to do that specifically when all I wanted to know was inbound and outbound call for a particular user, or meeting joins, routing group service, for response group service, excuse me, for voicemail, for media connectivity, device updates, CPS for call park services, audio video conferencing issues as well. So there's other ones, but I pointed out just the voice one specifically. So it's easy to do is just to kind of jot this down, keep the slide, whatever you want, and just remember scenarios. What scenario does this user kind of fit in? And once, and this goes back to the question that someone asked earlier, what components monitor for, or what components are logged for a different type, what should I do? Based upon the scenario, all the components that you should be logging, which is back in the console logger days, are done for you. If you want to add in more components, you can, by do different commandlets. This is something that we can do more investigation on TechNet for the actual commands, et cetera. But the nice thing is, all the components are done for you. Only thing you got to hit is start and reproduce the issue. Reproduce the issue unless, can anyone tell me for the last Skype scenario, why would I not have to reproduce the issue leveraging this? Perfect, exactly. So if you guys can pass this one back. The always on scenario, exactly, here is a scenario that I can have on, that I can specify to have on, and it will take a synopsis of basic core components in my environment, and it just continues to run. So now I just alleviated that user who's at home, who's very frustrated, who says, I've been having this issue all day. The last thing that they need to hear from you is, can you reproduce it? You know, and they're like, ugh, again? But now I have, the only side effect of this is I have more logs to go through because it's kind of continuously always running. But the always on, go back here. When do I use it? All the time. Keep in mind that it's not enabled by default. So I am specifying to turn that on. Here are some examples, and I'll show you as well. The turn on logging scenario, I'm basically saying start CS logging. I put in my always on, I'm putting in my pool. And outside of putting in my pool, I could have a scenario where I'm specifying the exact scenario for the exact pool that I want. So if I have three or four pools in my environment, I'm now specifying that I want to do incoming or voicemail or CPS or call park services for that specific pool because that's where issues are residing right now. Now, once I grab that information, the way I'm interpreting it is through Snooper. So here are some more commandlets, and these are just going to be basic core commandlets that you're running. Start, if I don't have always on, on, if I'm doing, I'm starting the actual commandlet, I'm starting the actual process, I'm stopping it, I'm querying it, I'm flushing it as far as flushing out the logs, and I'm doing a search for them. These are basic core commandlet. And then the best thing I tell people is, it is a change from the previous version, but you have to get used to it. Because without getting used to it, you're kind of stuck with trying to troubleshoot on the server side. I forgot to mention that. On the server side specifically, some of these logs. So let me kind of, again, the deck will be available for you. I need to speed up a little bit because I got like 15 minutes left and I got more slides to show you. So I'm going to give you a quick demo. Yes. It won't interact. So the question was, does the OCS logger interact specifically with this one? No, it doesn't. But you can use them still. You can still use the OCS logger with it. But I think once you compare the two side by side, to the gentleman, I forgot where you were, kind of over here, answer that question of which component, you'll see pretty quickly that this thing does all my work for me. Now, the nice thing that I've done, where did I put it? So I also wrote an article about this as well, because a gentleman came up with a great little add-in for this tool. Running the tool by itself, you need to know all the commandlets, the start, the stop, etc. But a gentleman wrote in basically a little plugin for this tool that can run on your front-end server. And where did I dump it? I dumped it, the actual file. It's called link logging. I dumped that in the actual directory where the CLS agent exists. And if you did a basic install, you know, I see some of you guys squinting in the back. If you did a basic install and you didn't kind of move a lot of directories around, you'll see this in the program files, common files, link 2013, and you'll see a CLS agent folder. And in that folder, you'll see these core files. And you can actually run the CLS agent from there. But this tool, and if you go to, I guess you could go to my Twitter site, I guess, and you look at all the articles I posted, you'll see one where I wrote about the CLS logging that talks about the tool and how to run it. The nice thing about this tool is I don't have to try to remember the scenarios. I was waiting for someone to say that. Well, how am I supposed to remember all these scenarios? So I basically saved this, and you can see that all the scenarios are there for me. So the only thing I got to do as an administrator is just pick any, meeny, miny, mo kind of thing as far as which scenario should I, you know, encounter in. Yes. Yes. I'm just going to pick call park, and it's just to show you the ease of this tool. It basically says it's starting the trace, logging is enabled, hit a key, and it's basically running at that point in time. So you can see trace status is success, it's kicking off. Press it when logging should be disabled, press it again, and it puts my file right wherever I want it. Now innately, I will tell you, this is where you open it through Snooper here. But this is just basically a notepad file. But normally what I would do is take that notepad file, drag it into Snooper, and then I'm looking at specifically from whatever user or whatever phone number that the user had trouble with. So you can see it's pretty easy. It's almost too easy. Some of you are probably saying, Brian, you're going to put me out of a job here. So, but the cool thing is that another tool that I'm making you familiar with that is available for you. And that is the central logging service. Now, I'm going to do a speed session now. I'm behind. Audio test service. So a lot of you are familiar with audio test service. And I'm going to go and show you the cool thing about it. So I'm going to play it, but also.
To check your call quality,
see,
record a short message after the tone. Then wait to hear how you sound.
I'm going to end it right there, because you may say, one, I already knew about it. That's fine. And a lot of you may use it from an end-user client perspective as well. So besides the PCD, pre-call diagnostics tool, you can also give a user this tool as well, and they have it on link. You'd be surprised on how many people say, I didn't even know that existed right then and there. And the great thing about this particular tool is they can hear how they're going to sound in that audio call. So if they have the new headset, they're on wireless, et cetera, they can hear that. Now for you guys, one side is for them from a visual perspective. Yes, I sound pretty well. But for you guys, there's logs that take place. For me, this is the good part. Because on that audio test service, that's technically a link call. Here are some things that are important to me on that. One, I can see my IP address. So I can see, so right then and there, I can see the IP address of my edge server. I'm remote. I can see my IP address. I can see that I'm a remote user. I can see what pool I'm actually talking to. Here's some more information as far as very similar to any call trace when I get my candidate list information. So some of this is a little bit irrelevant for what I'm trying to bring up to you, but you'll actually see on the right-hand side, there is insinuating it's a test bot that's making the actual call. Here, remember that ICE warning flags I was telling you about? You can get the same information from the user without them having to actually make a call. So you kind of backdoor into it again. So they'd say, if you want this information, and they say, well, I can't keep calling the same number because they're going to get pissed. Well, can you at least dial this audio test service? Because at the end, what I want is this. I want that ICE warning flag information to figure out what's possibly going on from their side. It still gives me the same identical thing, because Link just says, I'm making a call. Also, it tells me what particular front-end servers I'm talking to when I'm making that particular call, all from just running that little audio test service that every client has. Here's that candidate list that's available for me. So I don't have to have that user try to make another call to the PSTN or to another partner. I can actually have them run that. I get my same candidate list information. And there's another session that talks about the candidate list and ICE and TURN and how the candidates get published and what you should be looking for. So I don't want to take away from that session, but just showing you can get the same information from here. Some common scenarios: audio video conferencing, remote user enterprise voice. Scenarios for audio video conferencing. So a scenario that I'm drawing up for you is a user basically says, I'm trying to have an audio video conference call. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. Goes back to those three buckets. So I'm quickly trying to find out what's going on. So again, I'm doing a snooper trace. You don't have to use Snooper. Preferably, you have monitoring server. How many of you have the monitoring server deployed in your environment? I don't see 100% participation in that one. So you would have to go through Snooper to get the information. So as I'm looking through Snooper, what I'm actually looking for is, one, let me see that the person is actually trying to make a conference or initiate a conference. And two, what I'm looking for, actually, it's in another one as well, but I give you the wrong scenario. But in this particular scenario as well, I can find out what's happening in the user. For example, when a user tells me, you know what, whenever I put in my PIN, it's not recognizing me. Well, how do I find out what their PIN is? How do I find out if they put in the right PIN? What happens if someone, and I've actually had someone tell me before, every time that I initiate a conference, people just bypass the lobby. So right then and there, I can see recordings off. I can see bypass lobby is true. So I know it's nothing on the server side. That's all on the user side. Now, I've had a user tell me that. I'm like, well, go to meeting. I know I've already been there. I'm like, I didn't even finish telling you where to go. They're like, but I've done it. So you specify that people cannot. Yes, I've done it. I'm like, okay, fine. Give me a snooper trace. Find out right then and there that they have the wrong settings. So when I basically, and I've done it before, I said, I'll bet you lunch that you have the wrong setting. Go there, boom, and I know the answer before they even go there, just by doing a snooper trace. Again, basically audio, video, conference call, user has me having an issue. Here's one where again, goes back to the user saying, it works and doesn't work. Through Snooper, I'm looking at specific things as far as the noise level. I'm looking at listening MOS, network MOS, my degradation information. Here, I can see that it appears pretty high. Now, you may say, well, Byron, how do I know it's high based on what? You need to take a baseline. That's where the monitoring server comes in. Take a baseline of what a good call seems like during peak hours and also after peak hours. Because look at the difference. Peak time, off-peak time. Off-peak time, you can see that the MOS, 2.95, which is actually pretty good. One being so-so, four being pristine. Before, you saw that at 1.97. That's a big difference with that network MOS as far as now the quality of their call being established, but also the time. I did this test during off hours. So now I have other things to look at. Maybe during the day, maybe we need to implement bandwidth throttling, call and mission control. Remote enterprise voice. Here's a synopsis of what I took from making a call. I know it's kind of hard to see, so I blew it up here. And this is Byron basically trying to find out which routes I'm taking. So the quick way to find this, basically, in Snooper, is to put in search outbound routing. When you put in outbound routing, which will highlight, basically, the areas that you should look at, you will find an area that basically says the front-end server, the route that I'm going through, and the gateway that I'm connecting to. So if I want to confirm that someone has valid permissions to make this call, or is the gateway up, or is it what gateway they're using when they're international, I could definitely leverage Snooper. Here's also telling me from the Snooper traces what phone numbers I'm calling from. Again, more of the candidate list. So I can actually see what TCP and UDP pairs are being offered from the user. And again, just kind of a refresher, it goes from local, reflective, relay. Local means a local IP address, because I'll always try to talk peer-to-peer, UDP first, then TCP. Then I'll use my reflective, which is basically my public IP address of my router. And last but not least, I'll use my turn server, or my edge server, UDP, then TCP. Remote user, 404 slide. This basically identifies the route that I was taking earlier. And we'll go to monitoring reports. I got like less than 3 minutes here. So the monitoring report, I'm gonna go straight to the source and show you some cool scenarios. Enabling monitoring, my soapbox is gonna be, if you haven't enabled monitoring, you need to. You have no idea what you're missing. It's out-of-the-box reports. It's enabled on the front-end server. This is no separate server that you have to install anymore. So kind of make it more easy for you to just kind of hit a checkbox and deploy your back-end SQL, make sure your database is there, and you're ready to go. You're ready to go because now you have reports such as the following. Sample report. So instead of looking at the Snooper, because you're probably walking out of here saying, man, if I got to look at Snooper for everything, this is going to be a tough one to go forward. But now I have the monitoring server. The monitoring server gives me very gooey kind of information as far as how people are connecting. The same identification that's in the Snooper trace. But here, I can see what protocol I'm being leveraged, UDP. Here, I can see my call is inside and outside. That used to give me headaches, asking a person, are you inside or outside? You mean of a building? No. Are you at home? I'm in Starbucks, like someone mentioned. Exactly. Are you VPN? When you say VPN, do you mean VPN? No, NPV. You know, yes, are you VPN? Like when I sign in, I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, so I can basically get a network monitoring synopsis and find out what's happening on the user. When a user says, hey, whenever I make audio calls, they're very choppy. Well, you should not use it when you're in VPN. I'm never using VPN. Right then and there, it tells me they're using VPN. Here's another example. The codec. And again, I'm sorry for going long, but the fact that a lot of you guys are still here, I'm glad. Conferencing. So I also put, what does this tell us? The codec I'm leveraging is G722. Kind of, you'd have to know what I'm thinking to understand this one. But G722, there are two different types of codecs for conferencing. Siren and also G722. the fact that someone's connected through G722 lets me know that, well, how would Link know to use one versus the other one? Whenever a client has less than 25 milliseconds connection to an AV conferencing server, it would prefer to use Siren. Versus greater than 25 milliseconds, it would use, less than 25 milliseconds, G722. Greater than 25 milliseconds, you use Siren. But also that tells me if I'm using Siren, it could be coming through a WAN connection. Why? Because they're greater than that 25 milliseconds. And it also could be coming through the edge. So right then and there, it goes back to that whole core foundation that I was talking about earlier. You know, just knowing the codecs. Why would someone use the two different codecs? The fact that someone is leveraging G722 here, and knowing that when G722 is applied, is specifically when less than 25 milliseconds, coincides to why I see this. That's a pretty good audio conference call. It's above 3. Versus 1.5, because then something doesn't add up. 1.5, but the leverage of G722, this doesn't add up. Maybe I need to look at something else. But here it confirms this is a good call. Last but not least, synthetic transactions. So I wrote a few here, just focus on voice, that you have to leverage. You have to leverage. For those who have monitoring server, and if those who have SCOM and the monitoring server, leverage them both. Leverage a SCOM server to have watcher nodes deployed to run synthetic transactions on a continuous basis. Because troubleshooting is not always being reactive. It's also being proactive. Because I guarantee you, if I was to stop your UM services in the middle of the night, you would eventually find out. But being a manager, that manager is going to ask you probably within the first 5 minutes of that conversation, or the fourth or third question is going to be asked. It's going to be, did you fix the issue? Do you know what the issue is? And here's that third question. When did it start? The monitoring server with synthetic transactions and SCOM, you run synthetic transactions on a normal basis. So if you run this test for UM connectivity, and I run that every 30 minutes, now I have a more poignant time that, A, at 3:30 was the last successful connectivity test that I had. At 4 o'clock a.m., it failed. So something at 3:30 between 4 o'clock is where I'm looking at, even related to my event logs, compared to, let me go look at this long laundry list and figure out where it happened. That's where using synthetic transactions on the proactive side very comes in, specifically with voice. Perfect timing. I'm two minutes over. But first and foremost, I just want to say thank you for your attention, specifically after lunch, through a session where we were talking about troubleshooting just with voice. This slides will be available. I will go downstairs and make them available for you. Again, you can always contact me on my email address if you noticed it down, and I will try to escape and go to the beginning in case anyone wants to copy it down. But I will always be available to answer questions through email. You can see me on Twitter. I'm always posting through Windows IT Pro. I'm writing 2 to 3 articles a week. So I think this week there's another one coming out. But I did write one about the pre-call diagnostics. I wrote one about CLS. So you can see some more information there as well. So again, thank you for your time. Please fill out your surveys, and I'll be here to answer any questions you have after the fact.